Welcome, everybody. It's straight up 5 o'clock here on the West Coast. Time for the one show that wanders the world in search of answers. Answers to questions like, what are the new techniques for sales in this strange new world? It all starts with your personal guide, the Pilgrim on the 405, professional sales trainer extraordinaire, Will Crist, brought to you by Sandler Sales Training.
Well, welcome to Pilgrim Talks. As we walk up and down, drive around the 405, listen to people, talk on the phone, email, Twitter, follow people on blogs, there's a lot of conversation about what's going on in the marketplace, how things have changed dramatically, how much more difficult it is to get in touch with people, even if they want to get in touch with you, how much more buyers know before they ever get around to talking to a salesperson, who controls the process of buying and poking around and asking questions. All of these things have changed dramatically in the past 3 to 5 years. Now, along with them are business processes to take account and to deal with those changes in the marketplace. It means lots of changes for the sales processes that salespeople go through, with lots of changes for marketers in terms of marketing processes. I was speaking today to some people who specialize in helping people change their whole mental picture from one marketing set of eyes to a whole different set of eyes that has marketing processes and workflows, so that in marketing automation, people can get in touch with folks and help nurture them along the process of buying. And it's a very different way that people buy today than they did 3 to 5 years ago. Now, along this conversation are people not only who help people come up with new ideas, new ways of implementing workflows and process marketing processes. There's also the people who, having seen what is necessary to be done, who have a clear picture of what those processes are, then go about developing the tools to automate those processes, to make those processes repeatable, to make those processes consistent, to help reduce the learning time for salespeople and marketing people. Now, I got to admit that my journeys along the 405 have led me far afield, to Austin, to Boston, to San Francisco, to Berkeley, into Las Vegas, Boise, Idaho, Chicago, Cleveland, and Atlanta, hotbed in Atlanta of learning how these new markets require new processes, and along with that, new software, new developments of software to automate these processes. And a lot of these people have great insight into what's going on in the marketplace and what needs to go on in for marketers and for salespeople. And one of those is Jim Banks. I'm very impressed with the quality of Jim Banks' thought, his care, his concern, and his ability to marshal development projects to create something that sits on top of Salesforce. And let's hear more about that. And let's turn to Jim. Jim, tell us a little bit. Welcome to the show.
Well, thank you, Will. Good afternoon.
Yeah, tell us a little bit about what you have done to help salespeople use Salesforce, increase the adoption and the efficiency rate of use of Salesforce.
Well, one thing we recognized a long time ago is that all CRM has been a godsend, but then has been a nightmare as well. And my personal history was running a inside sales organization for Oracle as a direct report to Tom Siebel in the late 80s and early 90s. And then when Tom Siebel formed Siebel Systems, I had the great fortune of joining him very early in that. And what we saw was that the tools were great. They were designed for executives and management to help, for a very good purpose, to help those people chart a course for revenue. But the challenge had always been in those systems of it was a data out request by managers and executives. But the problem had always been one of data in, the actual men and women who performed on a day-to-day basis. It was very laborious for them to use the systems, and hence it was there wasn't enough benefit for them in order to put the data in, and therefore we always heard the stories about that it took too much energy to create the data. So what we did as a charter was to fix that, to turn the whole CRM system on its head and to take a bottoms-up approach. The men and women who actually, from our estimation, carry the freight day in and day out, calling on the phone, face-to-face, and being able to have access to the data as a tool for their use, and not where they were their admins feeding a tool that's for sales management and sales executives. So that's a long-winded answer, Will, to we really did try to turn it on its head and make it a tool that, through self-interest, sales performers would want to use the system. And we've been very fortunate that we've accomplished that, and we're getting great feedback, from our many customers.
Well, that's super. I know just from being able to look over your shoulder, this is going to be a tremendous help to people in terms of efficiency, effectiveness, and also motivation, because you begin to get up some momentum going in calling and in note taking, and you get that momentum going, and you can get some things done rather than be slugging along trying to fill in data fields and data forms. So congratulations, good job. What is it that you have found in the new marketplace? What are some of the things that you're discovering? What are the ideas that are important to salespeople that they know today in this world of social marketing, Twitter, blogs, podcasts? What have you found that's really important for salespeople to be aware of?
Great question, and thank you for taking us away from a tool. Tools are great, but only in the hands of somebody that will use them. And the big issue, I think, is captured in your question, is what are the ideas? What we're finding consistently, and it actually bridges small and large companies, entrepreneurial startups, as well as a larger, more traditional companies, is that it's harder and harder for sales professionals to get people to take their calls, return their calls, open up emails, or accept appointments. And in the inquiries that we've made, there's a consistent theme of lack of relevancy with the access, of course, we all know this mantra by heart, but as sales professionals, until the early 90s, we were welcomed into buyers' shops because we were the wealth of information. We knew the products and we knew how the products applied. But in many cases, buyers now, as we all know as much or better or more about our offerings than perhaps some of our sales professionals do. So what's becoming key, and it's exhibited in a number of initiatives that are already underway, making great headways, is under this theme of relevance. How do we appeal to people in the areas that are important to them? How do we capture their attention and interest? And it's a very different world now. One example, real quickly, is the great work that's being done in email marketing and web analytics. So the ability to more cost-effectively reach out to suspects and prospects and invite them to participate, and by coming to our websites, opening our emails, and clicking through to call to actions, make it much easier for us to understand, individuals and their related companies, areas of where we should be paying attention. But again, it comes back to what's relevant. As the give and take on that is that if we one thing that we have absolutely recognized is becoming a major focus on an attention to the different type of buyers that are interested in our offerings. that the day of one size fits all, or Ms. Prospect, tell me what's important to you. If you had a blank sheet of paper, what would a solution look like? You know, if that ever worked, it certainly doesn't work now. So being able to target by buyer type or persona is becoming a very relevant term, so that we can capture those places that we have been so successful in the past. If we have sold to 100 CFOs a solution that addressed 5, 6, 7 problems for CFOs, it makes sense that the other 2,000 or 3,000 CFOs of the same type, same size, same industry, there's a good chance that they have 2 or 3 or 4 of those same issues. To be able to talk of what's relevant and important to our buyers is becoming very, very, very important.
Why do you think that's important now? What do you think is going on there?
Well, I think that there's an interesting. I'm from Austin, Texas, and we have a we're very fortunate. We have a large group of very bright, very motivated 20-year-olds who are changing technology, and along with their great ideas comes an incredibly short attention span. So we all laugh about short attention span in the MTV generation, but it's prevalent in our buying communities as well, is that people won't suffer fools. They won't suffer people that are ill-prepared or unprepared. Those of us 20 years ago who took the time to read a prospectus, who went to ordered an annual report to understand the letter to the shareholders, that made us a 5 percenter 20, 25 years ago. That gave us entree much higher into an organization with a lot more credibility. Well, that kind of information is generally available to everybody. So the things that used to be special are no longer so. So, Will, when the importance of relevance is it isn't a single point anymore, but it's triangulating multiple points with inside an organization, as well as behavioral patterns from that type of buyer, as well as how our solution message in a cost-effective manner and be able to deliver a 30-second conversation that strikes at the heart of that issue is becoming critically important. And for those companies who can do that, they're going to differentiate themselves through more opportunities that close in shorter periods of time at a higher ASP. And we're starting to see that.
Yeah, because we've really moved to a compression of time, haven't we? What
yes,
you're
we
talking
have.
About relevance is get to the point. You have a certain amount of time that someone's going to allocate, and my sense is that it's almost like we've been trained, given the remote and the TV. I mean, we sit there, the TV comes on, and within a nanosecond, we're deciding this is an ad, or this is a story, this is a narrative, a drama, a comedy, and if it's an ad, we're beyond it. And if it's a story, then we've got another choice, do I want to watch this or not? But that happens in a very short period of time, right?
Yes, it does.
Now by relevance,
about choice, the number of choices, is a very valid one. But at the same time, it represents a great opportunity. Because there are any number of companies that I've had that I see have come to us, and they have incredibly great new technologies, things that are solving problems in a tenth the time, or at a tenth the cost, or returning 10x of value. But the great part about that is that if they do it in a slightly different way, it's very difficult for them to get the attention and interest. Those people are programmed. Buyers are programmed to think inside the box. So what can be done in order to cause the greatest thing in the world for all of us is when we have a unique offering that's different, that when we have a conversation and the person pauses for a second and says, I haven't thought about it that way. I didn't know that could be done. Or That's interesting. Tell me more. That's the coin of the realm that is critical for success. And to the traditional pipeline, I think that it is absolutely a recognition that there is there's a problem in a definition that's causing all of us great hardship, and that is traditionally pipelines were lead generation and marketing and opportunity management and sales. And that's what it was. So sales said, give us lots of leads. Marketing said, great. Sales then would say, these leads are no good. Marketing would say, well, how would you know? You never even look at them. Sales then retorts by saying, if they were any good, we'd look at them. And the inherent problem in that, I mean, there may be people smiling at that, but the inherent problem is that the definition of lead generation or lead management, if you will, it's not about just generating a name, but it's about qualifying that name. So there is a valley between a generated lead and an opportunity that can be managed as a potential revenue-bearing event. And that gulf, that valley, is because marketing and all the great sophistication tools that are available deliver somebody who profiles for our product based on we have past successes, we have references and case studies and proofs that people like them have benefited. But we do that in a impersonal or remote through our website and our communication patterns. That's why Twitter is so valuable, because if somebody says something and communicates in a more personal fashion about something, people take notice. And so, the critical thing that we as sales, as executives in our companies can drive more revenue is to optimize the conversation between a buyer and a seller. We can take all of these great generated leads, but if we don't engage them uniquely and authentically and, most important, relevantly or with relevance, we're gonna have a significantly less yield on every one of those conversations. And to me, I think that's the line in the sand, where if we can solve that problem of having more relevant and bringing the relevance to the one-on-one conversation between the buyer and seller, which has to happen in a B2B environment, I think that's where the game is going to be won and lost.
Well, what can be done?
Well, in large measure, it's going back to fundamentals. But it takes the sales professional is between a rock and a hard place, because there is a best way to prepare for a call, pre-call planning. And it says, let's have a purpose, let's research for what that purpose is, and if I'm speaking to an executive, what's his past experience, how has he come to our website, what do we know about him? We go to LinkedIn, perhaps, and see who we know that's in his, in our social, our business ecosystem with that person. And also, what conversations have I or my peers had with other people in his organization, combined with taking good marketing materials and knowing the best way to land on the beach. That pre-call planning process, we've actually measured it in high performing. It takes 6, 7, 8, 9 minutes per call. Against that, sales managers are driving for more calls, more calls, more calls. So
yes,
there has been some technology where applying a B2C technology of predictive dialers and auto dialers, applying it to B2B, where they'll just dial automatically and wait for the phone to ring, and a B2B salesperson picks up the phone. The problem with that is there's no relevancy. All it is the relevancy is the person's on the phone. So that between those two extremes of making lots of calls and making good calls is the challenge. So I encourage the listeners out there to find a way to go beyond straight Salesforce.com, if that's your choice, or Oracle Siebel, or Microsoft CRM, which are great tools, but they're foundational only. Example, Salesforce.com's AppExchange has over 2,000 tailored applications that sit on top of the Salesforce.com infrastructure, whose role it is to manage certain parts of the pipeline. Now, I mentioned the pipeline having two parts. I believe it should have three: lead generation, lead qualification, and opportunity management. and the 2,000-plus applications on the Salesforce.com App Exchange address certain aspects of that pipeline. So don't stop with just your CRM system. I think that's a major area. And I'll say one other thing, which I may be stepping in the goo on this one, but for all the executives that are in traffic now or in your offices, there's a great opportunity for us to lead by example. To all of us out there, I believe we have a great ability to manage, but I wonder our ability, can we lead as well as we manage? So leadership is always about leading by example, being in front of the troops, if you will. But I've seen case after case after case, Will, and I'll say in over 80% of companies, sales professionals are hired and then left with a tool that is unequipped. They're responsible for their own scripts, their own emails, their own target markets, their own entry points, their own qualification criteria, and it's not to me, it's not a way to run a railroad. If, as leaders, we take the time one time to sit down and define what qualification criteria is, we define that once, and everyone can subscribe to it over and over and over again. It'll bring a consistency. You mentioned process early. That's where great process is. And in fact, if under the banner of relevance, that will span any disconnect between marketing and sales, because what's relevant in a campaign should be picked up as relevant in a first conversation. That information then can be further qualified and expanded, which then get passed over to another sales organization or passed down into the sales process so that that information is shared. So I request, a personal request from a professional point of view, as sales leaders, we lead by example, and the best leadership by example now is taking the processes, defining them, and empowering those with the tools. So it's easier for our salespeople to do what we want them to do than it is for them to do it on their own.
All right. So you're talking about, you know, how does a sales organization improve its pipeline and close more business?
The specifics of what can be done is to, if we, by having qualification criteria specifically, we can target those folks who will benefit from our solution. And much earlier, we can recognize that people who will just never buy from us can be eliminated for the right reasons. It'll be less of a distraction. It'll consume less time, and we can focus on those that will buy. I will say that in opportunity management, the one area that I've seen through my experience and through our clients' experience, the number one reason why opportunities close, pipelines close at a 50% or less on average across the United States, is that opportunities have a key decision maker or an influencer get involved very late in the sales cycle, and that person's needs are not understood or addressed, which causes the opportunity to be pushed out into another period. So recommendation number one, and every sales manager on this call has an ability to ask this question: have we involved everybody who will be play a part in the evaluation, selection, and decision on this product? If that question is answered, the forecast accuracy will go up by double digits. That's one area specifically, and that's a process issue. That's simply asking the right questions of the first-level sales manager to the individual sales performer, and the sales executives asking that on a transaction review of that. The other area that I would highly recommend is the understanding that all leads are not the same. When marketing generates a lead, actually marketing has gotten a bum rap from sales, because it's their job to provide us in the sales organization with those people that are potential candidates for our products. Along the way, they may gather information that says, I'm interested in buying now, please have somebody call me. I've used your product successfully in the past. I'm in a new position, in a new company, same position in a new company. I want to bring your solution to my company. And those leads are red hot. And those are the ones that we want to follow up immediately with. And sales needs to recognize that for every one of those, there are five or six or seven that have to be courted. They have, those leads have the same characteristic. They have the same needs. They have the same background. But we have to work to get those. We have to ignite those. So that's nurturing. Now, nurturing has always been the in the realm of marketing. But I believe that there is a different type of nurturing that is sales nurture, where a sales professional has to stay in close contact with those so that they're there at the time when the actual buyer is ready to engage in a conversation. Again, our comp plans conspire against that type of selling approach, because we have to focus on either monthly or quarterly revenues. If something's out of the quarter and it's dead solid perfect, there's a good chance I am not going to, if I'm a typical high-performing rep, there's a chance I will not pay attention to that transaction, because it gets in the way of me paying attention to transactions in this quarter. So it requires, from a technology standpoint, a much greater ability to code opportunities and know where they're at and make sure that the system is automated in a fashion so that key touch points in, by key frequencies are done. All of this is capable, is possible with Salesforce and a number of the plugins that are available. But those would be the two recommendations, is to make sure that decision makers and opportunities are all well defined, and that's a simple question, and looking at the data inside Salesforce or CRM system, or in the second case, to recognize that there are outstanding leads that are fed by marketing, but it represents a small percentage of the total leads that are there, and that to not to judge all the leads by the fact that some of them are not ready to buy. So those would be the two areas that people can do it, and 30-40% of companies that we look at, management instructs their sales professionals to make sure that they use their CRM system, but the executives don't run their business on the CRM system. They ask the sales professionals and the managers to double enter the Excel spreadsheets into Word documents for briefing. And if you have more than one system for data, you have no accurate system for data. So that would be a third point that just came up.
Great. Listen, Jim, thank you so much for being with us. We want to get back to you again and talk some more about this, because it sounds to me like you're in the catbird seat about being able to look over people's shoulders and find out how they're using Salesforce, how they're using these new business processes in this new marketplace. And I think you're going to be able to give us a lot of insight and some good info and some good traffic on how we might be able to utilize this better. So if somebody wanted to talk to you personally and continue this conversation, what would be the best way to get in touch with you?
Thank you. And I would welcome every one of those. We are, as a company, we are students of this whole process. So I welcome every communique, CEO and founder of the company. And my email address is jim.banks@shadetreetechnology.com. And I ask the listeners if in the subject header, if you could just note that your interest or the email comes as a result of this interaction. It'll get above the noise, and I will welcome and respond promptly to those. So give us your tired, give us your poor, and we want to embrace it and learn from this process. So we do have a tool that's outstanding for certain areas, and I welcome people to go to our website and take a look at that, which is www.shadetreetechnology.com. And if there's any rock and rollers out there, South by Southwest is coming up in a couple of weeks, which is a major music venue here. And I welcome any travelers that might be coming out for that. we'll be hosting a lunch for a number of our clients that are doing that. And I welcome all the listeners on the 405 to join us for that lunch.
Great. You got a place to put a mattress, right?
No, I don't. But I got a tent. If they want to borrow a tent.
You got a tent. Okay, super. Listen, Jim, thank you so much for being with us. It's a lot of fun. I always enjoy being with you.
It was my pleasure. Thank you, everyone.
All right, so great times. A lot of good stuff coming around. People beginning to pick up on what's going on in this new marketplace, coming up with business processes to take advantage of what's happening out there to help people solve their problems, get beyond their silos and their walls that are protecting them. And then finally, coming up with software to automate these business processes. And we're getting right at the heart of the issues, so it's fun to be with you. Before we go on, let's have a word from Sandler Training, our sponsor.
And now let's move to the 17th. John Rollins has 123 yards to the hole and needs to stick this shot tight to have a chance for birdie. Looks like he likes it. Should have the distance. Yes, he nailed it to inside 2 feet.
What does it take to perform when the pressure's on? Ask PGA Tour golfer John Rollins, and he'll tell you it takes years of hard work. And it takes ongoing coaching and support from people who are determined to help you excel. The same is true with sales. That's why at Sandler Training, we bring you the reinforcement you need to take on any sales challenge. You won't fail, because we won't let you. Sandler Training, proud supporters of PGA Tour golfer John Rollins and thousands of exceptional sales performers around the world. Finding power in reinforcement.
To learn more about Sandler Sales Training, contact your local Sandler Sales Trainer. Here in Orange County, that's 949-350-6013. That's 949-355-6013. And now back to Pilgrim Talks with the Pilgrim on the 405, sponsored by Sandler Training.
We're going to spend a little time with the producer and owner of OC Talk Radio to talk a little bit about some of the interesting different things that salespeople might do, companies might do, to make a contact with those decision makers who are going to make decisions in a B2B environment. And so today we'll be interviewing Paul Roberts. So, Paul, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for allowing me to come from behind the curtain. I feel like the Wizard of Oz.
Yes, there we are. Well, but you're much more impressive than the Wizard of Oz when he comes out from behind the curtain. Let me tell you that. So, Paul, tell us how you got into this whole thing of octalkradio.net.
Well, like many of the people who listen, was involved as a service professional. I was a marketing guy, a PR guru. That's what I did pretty much for 20 years. And more of my clients kept saying, what do I do with social media? I know I got to be in it, but I don't know how I get any ROI. I don't know how I get any return out of it. And so I really tried to look into what's the meaning of social media? What is the promise? What's the potential? And it really boils down to one thing, starting a conversation. That's all you're trying to do. When you post to your blog, when you go on Twitter or LinkedIn or whatever, you're hoping to, yes, tell people, hey, look at me, I'm here. But more importantly, you want them to start a conversation. You want to show them what you know. You want to show them who you know. And more importantly, you want to get to know them. So you give them something for free in order to start this conversation. And it occurred to me, maybe because I'd been in real radio 100 years ago, that the easiest way to do this was to actually talk to people. If the point's to start a conversation, then actually have a conversation with somebody. Let that stream live and then record it and store it so it becomes a traditional podcast as well. And that was really the birth of this whole idea.
So what I'm hearing is that social media is more than just Twitter or Facebook or LinkedIn. Is that right?
It really is. You know, nobody's really sort of defined what it is. We know it's all those alternative ways to reach people through the internet. The internet is still being figured out how we use this tool to communicate with people. We know that all the traditional forms of media are rapidly dying out in their traditional forms and being reborn in online versions. Look at the growth of internet radio, music stations like Pandora and Last FM and all these others, Sirius FM. All these things are moving online. Newspapers are moving online. As they go out of business in print form, they go online and find a new way of doing business. The same thing even with TV shows and TV stations. So I thought, you know, why not talk radio? And how does it fit in? It really is, in my opinion, another form of social media. It's the same thing you try to do with a blog or Twitter or Facebook. You're trying to put a message out there and hope that somebody hears it and responds. Only in this case, it really is a dialogue. It really is a direct conversation. You're talking to somebody, and they can call in, as they can on this show or any others. They can call in and join in the conversation, either immediately or later.
All right. So social media has something to do with relationship. It has something to do with conversation. It has something to do with sharing for free. It seems to me that's a whole lot of how at least I saw the musicians using MP3s to share music for free. Is that anything like what we're doing here?
It's exactly what we're doing here. You know, you are obviously a well-known expert in your field. So how do you get that word out to people? How, and more importantly, how do you give them some flavor, some sense of what you do and how you do it? What is it that's different than the multitude of other people that claim to be sales trainers? What makes you so well thought of here in Orange County? And so if you can give them a sense of that by actually talking to them, and talking, and on top of that, gives them some free content, some share some ideas that you gather through your pilgrimage as you wander the world, as you say, and run into these people. You bring people together. You're the connector. You gather that information. You share it through your radio show, through your blog, through everything else that you do. And in doing that, people get to know you. People get to understand who you are, and hopefully start a conversation with you that maybe you can help them directly, or maybe it's somebody else that you know that can help them directly. That's the power. That's the potential of the internet. It's different than any other business model. It's very much a community sharing type of model.
And that's what you've called this radio station, right? This has been a community radio station. OC Talk Radio
absolutely
is a community station.
When I looked at the handful, again, if you look at the statistics, and there's many of them on our website, octalkradio.net, many of them talk about the growth in all the other forms of internet media, radio in particular. Nobody has a radio in their office anymore. If you listen to music at work, it's probably a CD you're playing, or more and more, it's an online radio service or radio station. Same thing with videos and everything else. You know, you're probably not watching it on a VHS anymore, or even a DVD. You're watching it on YouTube or online. So I thought immediately, gee, there must be a million people doing talk radio. And there's only a handful. And the few that are, in my opinion, are missing the boat. They're trying to be all things for all people. There's an excellent station out of Phoenix called Voice America. But it's that. It's reach the whole world through their platform. Well, I don't think that's what the Internet's about. The Internet's about narrow niche marketing. It's about, as the book, that famous book, The Long Tail, talks about, finding some narrow niche. It's narrow casting. And so you're trying to find a narrow niche of people and form a community around that, whether it's a community of people interested in some subject, whether it's a community of people who all share the same profession or passion, or a community of people that live in some locale. This is that. This is, I think, the first of its kind. I think there'll be many of them. It's a community radio station that comes to you live over the Internet instead of live through the air.
Well, I pick up on something that's, I think, equally important in that in addition to accumulating an audience that becomes a community, it's also generating a conversation that otherwise would not go on.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I mean, I'm thinking of CEOs, and right now, in many cases, CEOs are siloed. They're being protected behind immense bastions of bricks and concrete, because they're crazy busy. They don't have time for people to call and talk with them. On the other hand, if they don't have that human contact, if they don't have places where they're getting new ideas, if they don't have that kind of dialogue that happens in a relaxed a place where they're not threatened, where they're not going to be trying to, and somebody's not trying to sell to them, if they don't have that, they're going to be isolated and their productivity is going to go down.
And isn't that what you and all the other sales trainers that I've come to know through this station are always preaching against, that isolation, that that problem that if you're not in touch with your customers, you're not in touch with your organization, you're not in touch with your community as a whole, the dangers that that brings. So I think you're absolutely right. This is a way for them to reach out and share information with others. If for no other reason than they hope that, you know, somebody can benefit from it and maybe they'll get something in return. It's a new world of doing business. It isn't about me anymore. It's about how can I help others, and in the process of doing that, you know, help myself.
I also found that it's a very interesting source of information. And I'm thinking particularly about, you and I have talked about radio shows that would be valuable, and I know
yes,
that that one client that you're talking with, U-turn.com.
Mm-hmm.
Mark Babbitt was on the show.
Mm-hmm.
Mark and Bill Walsh on this show, and in talking with him, what they want to do right now, they're finding that this Gen Y group of kids is very, very different. And they told me that they had found this to be true as they tried to recruit interns to come on to their site. And in that conversation, what they began to tell me is that they were learning so much from the individual conversations that they were having, that this was a valuable source of information for them. And I suggested to them that getting a radio show
over the internet,
where they could interview two or three people from various colleges, could be a real source of information for them.
Absolutely. You know, there's so many benefits to doing this medium. You know, it doesn't cost an arm and a leg. There's obviously a small production charge for putting it together, and you do have to pass some tests. We're not trying to put on pet psychic shows here at OC Talk Radio. We're not trying to put on, you know, political points of view. We're trying to do something that benefits the community. So we're focusing on businesses and community groups and associations. But having said that, you know, what do groups like U-Turn or organizations like U-Turn get out of it? They get three or four things that I don't think they can get anywhere else. And the first is what you're talking about. They get access to a youthful audience. The youth of today, I'm in my mid-50s and my daughter is now in community college. She doesn't read a newspaper. She doesn't sit and watch television. She doesn't even really listen to a radio station anymore. So how do you reach her? You reach her through all those mobile devices that she carries around plugged into her brain all the time. The iPhone, the iPod, the iPad, the iThis. You know, it's all internet driven. And surprisingly, even my generation, even us who, you know, you wouldn't think of as internet oriented, are becoming tethered to this device. Every bit of information I get is probably through the internet. Every bit of information I put out about myself, my website, my blog, my email, all of that is communicated from me to the world through the internet. So it's a way to gather information, it's a way to put out information, and it's a way to gather, it's a point, really the only point at which we as gather together as tribes. You know, there's a famous book by Seth Godin about called Tribes, how people are trying to form communal connections again here. And where do you do that? You do that through the internet. You do that through sites like OC Talk Radio.
Well, that's interesting. And what when I was talking with Jill earlier this afternoon in preparation for next week's interview, what we were talking about is that that salespeople today have to do something different.
Yes. Oh, absolutely.
It's not just a matter of calling more people faster, because what's happening, and Jill pointed out a very interesting thing. She said, the next time you talk to a sales manager or a CEO of a company, and they say, I want my people to do more calling, what she suggested that I do is ask them how they deal with voicemails from salespeople who are trying to call them.
Hmm. Yeah.
She said they're going to suddenly realize that they, with glee, erase those voicemails very, very quickly.
Well, because it's what Marshall McLuhan and others talked about in the 70s, it's information overload. You know, with this new technology has come the ability to reach a multitude of people, millions of people, eons of people. And so we get overburdened with it. As much as we want to reach out and connect, as much as we don't want to be siloed, as you said, and stuck in our own little corner by ourselves, as much as we want to reach out to the world, we're also immediately putting up walls to filter through all that. We filter through our email. We screen our phone calls. We do all these various things here. So it is difficult to get through. And one of the powers of this medium is just that. It's an easy, unobtrusive way to reach people at their desk. They're listening to something. They're there. They can listen in the background. And if they find it interesting, they can chat with you. They can connect with you. They can send emails with you. But even more importantly, what you're getting at, I think, is the power of this, and this is going to sound silly, but as a prospecting tool. Let's say that you are an attorney, you're an accountant, and you're the best accountant in some specialization. You know, you specialize in something that nobody else does. One of the power of hosting a radio show is you get to demonstrate that expertise. It helps brand you as the guy who does that. And it, by definition, gives you a leg up on your competition who doesn't do any of that, who doesn't offer any of that advice or information. But more importantly, it gives you a way to talk to people. You call up somebody and say, hey, I want to come and meet you to sell you something, forget it. You tell them that you want to invite them to come to your thing, and they know that that's subtle to your seminar so that you can sell them something, forget it. But if you call up somebody and say, I don't want to sell you anything. I just want to spend a few minutes getting to know you, pick your brain, and share that with my network of people, my community. Would you object to that? Of course not. Who doesn't object to free publicity, and who wouldn't want to reach a whole new group of people? So it's a great icebreaker, a way to get to people and say, I'm not asking for anything except a few minutes of your time to talk, to share, and to get to know you. And maybe somewhere down the road, you'll find that there's a connection here. If not, I've done my part. I'm still gathering information and shedding it and sharing it to my community here.
Yeah, I think that's an important piece, is that it's number one, it's gathering information from my audience.
Mm-hmm.
And then number two, it's sharing it with others in the audience. And really what I begin to see is it's facilitating a conversation.
I see and sense, as I think you do, you're more in touch with the community than I am. I mean, I'm out there trying to promote this thing, but you've been doing this for a long time. You certainly have a lot of connections. Wouldn't you agree that today people are looking for a different way of business with the collapse of everything that we knew, the sort of Gordon Gekko, Wall Street, me first, you know, it's me versus the other guy. That sort of mentality is wobbly right now. And I see more and more people willing to join groups, share connections, crawl out of their cave and say, maybe we can all circle the wagon and help each other like pilgrims in the old days, you know?
Well, in talking with Jill, one of the things that she said was that in her experience, her sales training business went down.
Mm-hmm.
A couple of years ago, people didn't want to spend money on sales training. They believed they didn't need sales training.
Right.
And she began to write this book. And she said because she felt called to write it. She mm-hmm. looked around. She didn't see anybody else in the marketplace who was doing the kind of things that she wanted to help people do.
Mm-hmm.
So she wrote this book, and this book has become her radio show.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
This book has become her entrance. Somebody calls her, says, I'd like to talk with you. She says, have you read my book? No. She pops a book in the mail and ships it to him.
Right.
She's not looking at the book to produce revenue for her any more than I'm looking at this radio show to produce revenue for me.
Right.
It becomes a way of introducing myself and getting a conversation going.
And it allows you to take your passion. You know, you're obviously very passionate about what you do in many sense. And I hope this doesn't offend you or sound strange, but you have a spiritual calling to this. I mean, you really want to help people. And I run into more and more of that. That's refreshing. You know, I'm cynical. I'm from the old school. Immediately, I want to know what's in it for you or what's in it for me, you know. And I hear more and more people, just like you're talking about with Jill, just like you're talking about in your own experience, saying, you know, I've been through all this. I've weathered the storm. And I think I've learned something. I think I've gathered some interesting facts. And rather than hold on to them for my benefit only, I'd like to share them with the world. Maybe that'll benefit me. Maybe that won't. But whether it does or not, I feel compelled to share that information. And I'm convinced that if we all did that, if we all helped each other a little bit, we'd get through this a lot better and come out on the other side in a better position. I mean, don't you sense that somehow it has changed?
Oh, absolutely, because you can't be on this radio show and expect to have an audience if you're just talking about yourself.
Yeah, right, right.
Because it's only a click away to get rid of you.
Yeah, right, that's
a good point. Nobody's going to download an hour radio show if they believe it's going to be all about you.
Right. I was just going to say, there's a movement afoot, I think, to change the way business is done. And maybe I'm idealistic. Maybe I'm just because I suddenly have found my new religion, my new passion for this new medium, this new type of social medium, this new type of community. But that's what I've been reading about forever. It's all about creating communities through the internet and through that sharing and exchanging information and the idea that together we can help each other and that somehow we can do that in a non-threatening way. That doesn't, I'm not giving up any state secrets. I'm not helping my competitor beat me. That somehow together we are better than we are alone. And that's why I got into this. I could stay on and do marketing. That's why I suspect you and so many of the others are doing these shows, because you really want to gather information and share it with people.
Well, and I also find that the radio show is a way of getting the conversation started. But it's also important to do what I do, which is to call the pilgrims, the fellow pilgrim. Once you're on my radio show, you're a fellow pilgrim
right.
on the 405.
Right.
And call them together from time to time, just to let them get to know each other, to share with what they've done, and also to see some of the fantastic things that are going on in Orange County. I mean, the efforts of people in Orange County are changing the world. Telecom is being changed.
Absolutely.
The way that, that electricity is going to be generated for cell phones is being changed. The way that iPhone and iPad apps are being built.
Biology companies, everything. Yeah, and I think that's another thing. I'm stunned since I started that. I started this because I believed in the idea that Orange County and other places needed a soapbox, needed a community forum. We don't have a town square anymore. We don't have a place where we all gather and talk about things and share stuff. So I thought this could be that sort of medium. And I saw that there was a tremendous need for businesses out there who can't get interviewed any other way, who can't get their message out. This takes the middleman out of the equation. You don't have to beg some TV or radio station to give you a couple minutes of access, particularly when those forums are shrinking. The access points are limited. So all of those reasons I got into this. But having said it, it's what you're talking about. It's that idea of, I love the name of your show, The Pilgrim on the 405. Aren't we all pilgrims out there? Trying to find our way in the wilderness here, and wouldn't we be better if we all hook up together and share information? And out of that, I guess the long-winded way of saying it is, I've learned it ain't as bad as the media portrays it. This 24/7 news cycle and these antagonistic political parties that only want to make it look worse so you'll vote the current guy in, throw the bums out, and bring them in. Whichever side you're on, left or right, it seems like it's all about just throwing the other guy out, means that all they do is amplify the negative news and amplify the bad news. And through your show and others, I'm hearing it ain't as bad as everybody thinks. I'm hearing, even in the midst of the Great Recession, there are people doing great things. And that's refreshing for me to hear. And I don't get that through traditional media.
Yeah. And I was thinking about what we're looking for right now, because I was talking to a fellow, is in a networking group with me, and we've been working on some projects together. They come from his company comes from Mexico and South America, and we've been talking about helping companies expand into Latin America
sure.
and Central America, and so I think what you and I picked up on was how significant it is. That companies here in Orange County, how significant is it for them to begin to look at how they would expand into Mexico, Latin, and Central America?
Mm-hmm.
When you realize that the GDP of Mexico is larger than the GDP of Canada.
You told me that, and I still find that amazing and hard to believe. You know, there's a marketplace I never hear people talk about. Everybody's hot about China, and in fact, we started a new show just today about how do you do business in China here on OC Talk Radio. And I know that's a hot topic, but what you opened my eyes to, and your guests and your connections did, it's a bigger world than just China right now. As big as that market is and as hot as that's growing, what about the rest of the world? And the stuff that we're creating here is still state-of-the-art, cutting-edge. Nobody else is doing it. And we're all throwing our hands up saying, gee, nobody in America wants to buy it. Nobody in America has the money to invest in it. What about the rest of the world? Brazil and places like that that are just booming. And this medium, again, it's not just a community forum. It's a community forum that also has the benefit of reaching the entire world. If you want to communicate to people around the globe, what better way than the internet?
Well, one of the things that I found very interesting was one of our guests on the show wanted to expand, and if you go back and listen to the other shows, you'll know exactly what I'm talking about. But he wanted to expand his business into Mexico and Latin America and Europe. Mm-hmm. And what he needs is he needs to identify qualified, capable, competent, trustable representatives,
right.
Distributors.
It's a different world.
He doesn't, Latin America.
Right. Who's going to take his product into the door? Who's going to explain to him the different mores and business practices there? Exactly.
Yeah, that's correct. And so he's at a loss. He's willing to fly down there to meet with people, but he didn't have anybody to contact.
Right.
Well, another person that I interviewed on SLMA radio, that's her job is to make those kind of contacts.
Yeah, right.
She has contacts all over Europe, all over Brazil, all over Latin and Central America. And they're going to get hooked up. And what's going to happen is he's going to be able to use her at a reasonable cost to call those companies in their language, speak to those distributors based upon the template that he gives her. And he's going to be able to double, triple his business by expanding into those marketplaces.
So there you brought out three interesting things. Number one, even in bad times, there are opportunities. If you're willing to get outside of your box, as we all say, and look around. Okay, so he identified another opportunity. The second thing is, okay, so how do I find somebody who can, how do I find that middleman? How do I find that bridge to where I want to go? I don't know anything about Latin America. So he found through a community, through a network, he stumbled upon somebody he would have never, ever, ever found any other way. And three, now, you know, the power of that new community, that new connection that he's made opens up an entire different sales channel for him with new opportunities. And it was all done through network and internet.
Phenomenal. That's right. And it was done because we're building that community on octalkradio.net.
I was watching a thing on ants the other day, and maybe this is a terrible analogy, but my daughter was fascinated with these army ants and how they overcome every obstacle, little tiny ants, and how they just march through the jungle in South America, I think it is. And they can overcome anything because they literally link together and form a bridge, a living bridge over a stream, over a chasm, over any gap. They get around it because they literally hook together and let the others climb on their backs. Isn't that kind of what we're all trying to do here? Isn't that the power of networking and community and communication tools like this one?
Yeah, what one thing that I have found, I was talking to a group of people talking about the management program that I do for people who were meeting today. And one of the things that I said was, you know, you sometimes hear people saying business is hard right now. It's very difficult to find business. And what I asked them to consider was changing the language that they're using.
Right.
Because it's not hard like a wall or a brick is hard. It's
right.
Not hard like a concrete floor is hard. Change the language. What it really is saying is we're saying we haven't found a way to accomplish the goals that we want. We haven't found a way to find the results that we want.
We haven't found a path, and you're a pathfinder. Just as you helped connect two people together who would have never met each other, the guy who wants to go to South America and the woman who's looking for clients to advise about South America, you hook them together. That you were the common link in that bridge. Maybe you get something out of it. Maybe you don't. You probably don't in the short run. But what you do get is part of now, you become part of their circle of advisors and friends. And that, in the long run, we got to all believe that's going to benefit all of us, that that somehow comes back. Maybe that's touchy-feely. Maybe that's spiritual. Maybe that's new age or whatever, or old age. I don't know. Whatever it is, it's a different way of doing business than I've ever seen before. And it's a refreshing change from the isolated, screw you, it's me against the world, and, you know, zero-sum game. I win, you lose.
Yeah, and I think that's where what we're finding with the Internet, there's no question that if you watch what is being said, a lot of the Internet is giving away a lot of things for free.
Yeah.
Now, in training my salespeople, in my sales training, what we always have to do is we're not going to do a lot of free consulting.
No.
We're not going to get in there and do things with the hope that maybe they'll do business with us if we're really nice.
Right, that's different.
We get very clear about what we're giving away in order to exchange or get this conversation going.
Yeah,
and that's something for free. Just like what we're doing here is we're doing something for free to get the conversation going, to find out what needs are out there,
yeah,
to explore those possibilities.
That's the currency of the Internet. You know, there is a current, both an electric current and a financial current. And the only stake in the game, the only buy-in to this giant poker game we're all playing, is that you got to put something on the table. And you put something on the table, show me what you know, share a little bit of it, share a little bit about you, and open yourself up and put that out there and be willing to, you know, reach. If you hear, see a need that you can plug, jump in and help some people there, in the hope that that will come back to you tenfold. That's not just only a very religious idea. It's the idea that built this country as we marched across the Great West. And it's, I think, the way that they've done business in Asia for a long time. It's all based on relationships. You can't just march over to China and say, hi, I want to do business with you. They want to get to know you. They want to take you to dinner. They expect you to take them to dinner. There's an exchange that goes place. And out of that offering comes a reply, and out of that reply starts a conversation which may lead down a path towards mutual benefit. If not, you've made a connection, and then it's a question of your connection thinking of you when they're in with somebody else. It's creating a network. That takes time, that takes effort, and that's what's hard. You know, what's hard about business today is you got to get off your butt and do something. You got to get out and network again. You got to put together social media and throw offerings out to the Internet here. You've got to bait the hook. You can't just sit there and collect the checks anymore. And I think that's what's hard.
Well, let me challenge that word hard again.
Okay.
Isn't it risk? It's taking a risk.
Oh, sure. And that, isn't that the hardest thing of all to do? To either change or to make yourself vulnerable, to put yourself out there and try something different? That's scary.
I don't know that that's hard. I think it could be threatening or frightening.
Right.
I don't know that it's hard.
I think
it's
that's
just
what
scary.
And I think that's where people misuse the term. I'm with you. I think they substitute hard for it. Hard in their mind is, I got to do something different. I got to learn a new way. I got to get out and try stuff. I got to get out into the world. I got to connect with the world through the Internet. I got to learn some new technologies, maybe. They use the word hard when hard really should mean something that you can't overcome. I can't get through a brick wall, but I can climb over it.
That's right. And once you get beyond that use of that word hard to substitute for risky, then it becomes something I can do something about.
Right.
I can make the choice. I know it's a risk. I know I'll be vulnerable. I might fail. But isn't that what business and entrepreneurship is about, is taking risks?
I'll tell you an interesting story, and I won't tell you who it is, but I had a host on this show who was telling me he was a service professional, and he was saying that he was having trouble getting appointments. And now he came back after doing this, and he found that this hosting a show opened him up to a whole new world of possibilities. Suddenly he could talk to anybody. Everybody was willing to talk to him if he was willing to put it out on the radio and give them a copy later that they could put on their website and send to their network. Who would refuse that? So now what he was complaining about, first he was complaining he didn't have any opportunities to talk to him, but he couldn't get an appointment. Now he's talking about how hard it is. Gee, all I do is go talk to people all week. And I laughed. I said, you know, listen to yourself. If I'd said this 6 months ago, that your biggest challenge is how many people you have to talk to and how hard it is to fit them all in, you know, geez, we should all have those kinds of difficulties here. And he laughed. But, you know, it's so if you're in that mentality of thinking things are hard, you can always find something hard to,
that's right.
hard
that's
to
right.
do.
That's right. It's simply finding a system, finding a way that will get me the results that I want, that I'm looking for. And that very often, if I'm not getting those results, it means changing my behaviors.
Right.
Coming up with different behaviors. And sometimes those behaviors, I'm going to make the wrong choice and I'm going to come up with equally disappointing results. So I stop and try some more. It's not hard in so much as it is risky. It makes me vulnerable. I might be embarrassed. I might fail. Nevertheless, I can pick up the phone and keep doing it because it's not hard. It simply makes me a little uncomfortable.
What's hard? If there's a brick wall in front of me and I run my head into it three times and realize that I'm not going to break through, is it harder to climb over the wall or is it harder to just sit down and give up? It seems like it's easier to sit down and give up, but man, that then things really get hard.
That's right. Well, listen, Paul, this has been great. I really appreciate you taking some time to come out from behind the veil back there, come out of the Wizard of Oz tent and share with us a little bit about what you have learned about social marketing, social networking, this new media, and the role of radio information giving in building the network that's going to propel us into this whole new world of sales and marketing and helping businesses in Orange County thrive.
Well,
so thank you so much for being with us.
Well, thank you. And let me just put a plug in again for you and all the other pilgrims. You really are a pilgrim. When I met you and you said that's what you call yourself, I smiled because I knew right away that you got this new medium, that you were willing to take a risk and put yourself out there, that you were willing to gather information and help and share it to other people for no immediate gain other than you believe that's the way business should be. And you truly are a pilgrim, not just on the 405, but in this new medium. So thank you very much for being who you are and for continuing your pilgrimage here on our station.
Well, we will continue that. And I let those listeners know we've been interviewing Paul Roberts, the man behind the veil, a man with his fingers on the knobs at octalkradio.net. And for those of you who have been joining us late in this pilgrimage, all the shows... and I think there must be 30 or 40 people that we've interviewed in the past 6 months. They're all available at octalkradio.net under the show The Pilgrim on the 405. Or you can go to iTunes and subscribe to Pilgrim on the 405 podcast. And there are various other places on the Internet. Also, if you have a story that you want to tell, get in touch with me. It's a Will Christ, W-I-L-L-C-R-I-S-T, Will Christ, at, and here comes the difficult part now. Are you ready? WillChrist.com. Send me an email. Tell me what you want to talk about. Give me a time when we can talk, or call me at 949-355-6013. 949-355-6013. Take a look at what we're doing, and join us next week for another set of Pilgrim Talks, and especially I draw your attention to Jill Conrath, the author of Snap Selling, who will be interviewing on SLMA Radio on Thursday afternoon at 5 o'clock. So that's where we are today for Pilgrim Talks with the Pilgrim on the 405. Appreciate you being with us. Look forward to talking with you next week. Go out there and find some people to share your information with and find out how you can help them.